ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शक्तिपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमुरुपुरीं माधुरीं कोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशां प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथिता कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं गतोऽस्मि वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परिकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साकजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं भजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च शान्ताकारं भुजगशयनम् मेघवर्णं शुभंगं विश्वाधरं गगनसदृशं लक्ष्मीकान्तं कमलनयनं योगिभिर्ध्यानगम्यं वन्दे विष्णुं भवभयहरं सर्वलोकैकनाथं हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे I'm continuing to speak on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. Backtracking to... I'm not speaking very loud now. Backtracking to Bahushira, which means many-headed, a name of Anantadev, the snake form of the Lord with many heads, who is also serves as the bed of the Lord. So many heads. Sometimes he's referred to as Sahasravadana, or one who has 1,000 mouths. But just like this Vishnu Sahasranama is referred to as Sahasranama, 1,000 names. Actually, it's not exactly 1,000 names given here. Just like there are so many halls in temples in South India, which are said to be of 1,000 pillars. They're not exactly 1,000 pillars, but it's indicative of many. Actually, Vishnu has unlimited names. So Bahu means many. So how many? You can't say exactly. Many, 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 many. However many you can think of, there are more. So, to name 118, Vishvayonihi, the second meaning given, is one who unites his devotee with himself. Yoni, this means womb. So just like the child lies in the womb for 10 months. According to Vedic understanding, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 months. Of course, the month in the Vedic calendar is a little shorter than the Western one, which they say 9 months, Gregorian calendar. So the child naturally has a very strong bond with the mother, but one who brings his devotee to himself. So we find that Krishna, he's always very anxious to bring his devotees to him. In fact, the whole material world is set up for two purposes. One is to fulfill, not just the devotees, specifically the devotees who wants to bring to him, and he wants to bring everyone to him because everyone's his devotee. So the whole material world is set up for the purpose of indulging the fantasies of the rebellious jivas who do not want to surrender to Krishna. People have fantasies. They fantasize about this and that. But the whole material world is a fantasy in which people can play out their dream roles. They try to fulfill their desires. Krishna gives facility. But there's another purpose also, that it is meant for reforming the conditioned souls who have forgotten Krishna. So Krishna, he personally comes. He sends his devotees. He appears as his holy dham. He is present as his holy name, as the deity. In so many ways, Krishna is anxious to bring the conditioned souls to him, to unite them to him. And especially if one takes up devotional service, or if one comes in the shelter of a devotee, somehow if one has a connection with a devotee, then he is benefited. Srila Prabhupada commented about the crocodile who was holding onto the foot of Gajendra in the water for a thousand celestial years, which is a very long time. So the crocodile was also delivered by Lord Vishnu by having his head cut off, and then he lost the crocodile body and went back to being a resident of the heavenly planet. So Srila Prabhupada commented on this. Tandera Charana Sevi. This crocodile had been in contact with the lotus foot of a Vaishnava. So he was benefited. Even in an inimical way, that we don't recommend that you go around stomping on the feet of Vaishnavas or biting their feet. But even if one was to do so, one would be benefited. Well, there are other ways of, more respectful ways, more favorable ways of getting in contact with the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. It often happens inadvertently while we're bowing down to offer obeisance. Either we put our foot on the head of a Vaishnava, which isn't very good for us, or even without trying for it, we get the lotus foot dust of a Vaishnava on our head. So that's all very favorable for devotional service. So Bhagavan, Vishnu, Krishna, he is very anxious to bring his devotees to him. As Srila Prabhupada said, if we take one step toward Krishna, he will take 10 steps towards us. He's very eager, he sets up this material world in such a way that it is full of suffering. Why is that? Well, because we're inflicting suffering on others due to the bad consciousness of rejecting Krishna. But that has a purpose also to wake us up, that we're not meant to be with anyone. We're not but Krishna. We're meant to be serving Krishna. And Krishna, he always looks after his devotees, even in the most adverse situations. Just like the king Indradyumna, he was cursed by Agastya Muni to take birth in the body of an elephant, because an elephant is a dumb animal. It's not, just lives in the jungle. So an elephant lived, this Gajendra, he was living in the jungle. And what chance was there for him to make any spiritual advancement? There's no association, no devotees. And he was in the body of an elephant, which is stupid. Yeah, it's not very intelligent. But even though he was put into a situation whereas previously he had been meditating on Vishnu, and then he was in the body of an elephant and had forgotten all of that. That's just the nature of the cycle of birth and death, is that we forget our previous situation. But Bhagavan Vishnu did not forget him, and Bhagavan orchestrated a situation whereby that great devotee who was circumstantially placed in the body of an elephant had memory of his previous worship of Vishnu and called out to him. And taking a lotus from that lake, he held it up in his trunk, offering that to Vishnu. And immediately Vishnu came from a long distance to deliver his devotee. He came rushing, leaving Vaikuntha, came rushing to deliver his devotee from that situation and to deliver him from the cycle of birth and death. So it was actually, in one sense, the great mercy of Agastya, the curse of a Vaishnava, is always favorable, because to attain perfection by meditation is a very long process. The process of meditation, by its very nature, is passive. One is very calm and peaceful. But surrender to Krishna is intensely emotional. So the meditation process, it almost, even if one is meditating on Vishnu, it almost works against the perfection of bhakti, because one has to remain calm and peaceful. But in bhakti, one is there's no calm or peacefulness, at least when calm, C-A-L-M, not Sanskrit or karma. So, but this elephant, apparent elephant, being in that distressed situation where he was feeling extreme pain, even though he was the king of the jungle, his undisputed monarchy over all the, even the lions and other animals, usually lions, they, if in a fight between a lion and an elephant, the lion is victorious, but this elephant was so powerful that he was the undisputed king of the jungle. He was protecting his wives and children. He was a good family man. He was thinking to himself, I'm so happy here in this situation. All of a sudden he was put in this serious situation, which he might have thought that, well, I'll conquer over the crocodile, but he didn't. And he went on fighting, and he didn't. And he was gradually being overpowered. And at that time, it came to his mind the memory of his meditation on Vishnu, of the prayers he'd offered to Vishnu. Then again, he offered prayer, but this time with great intensity of feeling, calling out to Krishna. And Krishna came and delivered him, which... So Agastya's curse turned out to be a blessing for Indrajumna, because no curse can destroy one's devotional service. That is a permanent asset. That's always there. And that's why a devotee, he doesn't feel, in any situation, he doesn't feel that he's bereft of Krishna's mercy. He always sees, any situation, this must be Krishna's mercy on me. Krishna has a plan to destroy my material attachments. A devotee is always conscious that Krishna is trying to bring me to him, despite our own unwillingness. We make one step toward Krishna and we're looking back and thinking, maybe I should step backward, or I won't make any more, that's enough for now. But Krishna, he doesn't think like that. He's pulling us toward him. He run and embrace us and pull us, and that embrace may come in the form of yasyaham anugrahinami harishye tadhanam shanai. We're thinking how Krishna will embrace us. He may embrace us by taking away everything that we have, so that we have nothing in this world, have nothing left. And I'm holding on to my material attachments. And when we have nothing left to hold on to, then like Draupadi, Govinda, 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 and then Govinda comes. So Krishna, the devotee, has the faith that Krishna is always with me. And even in adverse circumstances, apparently adverse circumstances, the devotee understands that Krishna has his plan. Krishna wants to deliver me. Despite my own madness. That's why we also shouldn't be discouraged in devotional service. Even if it feels we're not making any advancement and I have so many material desires, it doesn't seem like they're going away. But we should remain faithful to the process and know that Krishna, if we try to please him, that Krishna is not ungrateful. That is one of the names of Krishna already given. Kritagya, grateful. Krishna, he is pleased if we chant his names, we dance in kirtan. Even Srila Prabhupada sometimes used to condemn, not exactly condemn, but criticize, that those who are simply remaining in the temple ringing the bell, they have no devotional service beyond that. So from one perspective, that is criticized. He was criticizing especially his godbrothers for being bell ringers when there's preaching to be done all over the world. But from another perspective, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the neophyte devotee ringing the bell in the temple. There's no bell here, actually. There used to be a bell. What happened to the bell? We have to have a... Just now coming. All right. So, bell is required. Sometimes we put these Chinese tinkling bells that in the wind they blow. But chiming bells. But in the Indian temples, you say they have big bells, so it makes a big loud dung. Krishna hears that. So that's the kind of bell that Krishna likes. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the neophyte devotees ringing the bell during the arati in the temple, even once, is more beneficial to human society, both materially and spiritually, than millions of karmis opening millions of hospitals and doing all kinds of welfare projects. So, if we can't do anything else, we can just ring the bell. And that's all. And Krishna will be pleased. And Krishna will arrange. Oh, ring the bell. Good. I like that. Yeah, I like that. I like that person's ringing the bell. Oh, he's doing that for me. Even the person not even thinking of Krishna. But he's doing it in Krishna's name. All right. There are so many narrations in Shastra that during the month of Kartik, one mouse came in the temple, was very hungry. The light was, the deepam, that ghee lamp was burning in the temple before the deity. And the mouse was very hungry, so he took that cotton wool with the ghee and started to eat it. But he was burning, so it burned his whiskers. And the ghee had already gone on his whiskers, so it became... So he started jumping in pain, and he died like that. But Krishna thought, oh, he was doing arati to me. See, his whiskers were burning, and he died doing that. So then he took him back to Godhead. There are so many instances. We don't recommend... Don't make yourself into a... What is that? A suicide fire bomber and jump... Dance in the temple before Krishna. That's not the purport, but the purport is that Krishna is little service. He's very pleased. He's always thinking how to bring, looking in the rule book, someone who's offering me arati and dies, they should go back to, oh, okay, all right, he's eligible. His mouse, okay, never mind, putting him in anyway. So Krishna's always trying to bring his devotees to himself. As he states in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Sataza Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Bunti Yogam Tam Yena Mamupiyanti Te. Tesham Evanukam Partamaham Agyana Jantamaha Nashyam Yatma Bhavas To. Gyana Deepena Bhasvata. The Krishna says to those devotees who are always worshipping me with great love, then I give the intelligence to them by which they can come to me. Out of compassion for them, I ignite the fire of knowledge within their heart, which destroys the ignorance which binds one to this world. So Krishna helps the devotees, and even those who are not fully engaged, not fully on the platform of pure love, then Krishna, he brings them in. People come to devotional service for different reasons. Very few people come to Krishna in the beginning with purely devotional motives. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritina arjana. Artho jinyasur artharti gyani chabhartar shabha. Four kinds of pious people take to devotional service. Some kind of devotional service. Out of distress, seeking relief, wanting money, merely curious. And the best, Krishna says, is one who knows who is Krishna and therefore comes to Krishna. But even others who do not have such very pure motives in approaching Krishna. Krishna, this is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Krishna, he sees someone is approaching me, but he's foolish, he has so many material desires. So, all right. And Krishna may fulfill the desire, but not in such a way that his material desires will increase, but in such a way that his material desires will decrease. And the very fact that he comes close to Krishna, Krishna is like a magnet, a very powerful magnet. That akarshan, it means attraction. Akarshak is a magnet. So Krishna, the very name Krishna, means attractive. So if some iron filings come close to a powerful magnet, they cannot but be attracted to it. So in the same way, we being very small and Krishna being very powerful, if we somehow come in the atmosphere of Krishna, Krishna will attract us. Now, Krishna is very eager to bring us to him. And even, one step we take toward Krishna, he takes 10 toward us. But even if we step away from Krishna, as we do in this material world, coming to this material world means to step away from Krishna. But Krishna, he doesn't step away from us. Krishna says, "Ye yata mam prapadyante tans tathaiva bhajami aham." I reciprocate with others according to how they behave with me. But Krishna's reciprocation is not exactly measured. It's different in different cases. If we step away from Krishna, then Krishna simply remains waiting. He doesn't reject us. But if we step toward Krishna, Krishna runs toward us. If we step away from Krishna, he doesn't step away from us. And after millions of lifetimes of stepping away from Krishna, if we start to turn back, Krishna doesn't say, "Well, you rejected me, now I'm rejecting you." But immediately, he's willing to take us. So these are some thoughts. There are other examples, Ajamil, so many examples. How he forgot Krishna, but Krishna didn't forget him. Although Ajamil had gone away from devotional service, Krishna was always thinking how to bring him, how to bring him, how to bring him. And although Ajamil had no desire to serve Krishna during his sinful life. But Krishna inspired him to name his last son Narayana. So he was always calling Narayana, 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 Narayana. And that became the cause of his deliverance. All right. Well, if I start the next one, it's going to go too long. So, any question about this? Yes, please. We have this. There's another microphone.
Thank you, Maharaj. Very, very informative class. I'm wondering, is it recommended that devotees chant the Vishnu Sahasranam?
Is it recommended that devotees chant Vishnu Sahasranam? Bhishma Dev recommended it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as it's recorded, he asked Srivas Thakur to recite it for him. And certainly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, traveling all over India, must have heard it many times because it was standard until recently, standard for at least Brahmanas, maybe in that time others also, to recite. It was very, very popular. Baladev Vidyabhushan gave a commentary on it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he stated that, what is it, Mahabharatam, Vishnu Sahasranam, these are two great treasures within the Vedic literature. So we can also chant. There are so many Sahasrana. Actually, if we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that in terms of course we can't materially quantify it, but in terms of spiritual purification, that's more than chanting Vishnu Sahasranama. It's like an easy way to do it. By chanting and by discussing, then we get different perspectives on the qualities of Krishna. And that should inspire devotees to surrender to him more, to become more attached to him, to engage in his service more. So we can do, there are so many. We can chant Mukunda Mala, very, very beautiful. Stotra Ratna, there are so many. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion that devotees can select their own personal choice, some different prayers, and chant them regularly. So there are others also. Vishnu Sahasranam is... It's generally, most of the names establishing the glories of Vishnu, whereas there are others. There are many names of Vishnu, or especially Krishna, that describe his pastimes in relation to his devotees, like this. So we may choose either. Practically all great devotee poets have made songs and poems, the names of Vishnu, Krishna, like this. So we can choose some. This is Vishnu Sahasranam is especially, or was especially popular. Still you see in South India especially, this retired Brahmanas in the evening, they'll come together daily, both Smartas and Vaishnavas together, because traditionally, both Smartas and Vaishnavas used to chant it, and they'll sit and chant it like this. So, I just thought to go through it myself to speak on this. It's all Bhagavatam philosophy, and it's a nice meditation. I hope the devotees are not disturbed by me doing this. Yes.
Maharaj, I heard Srila Prabhupada say once, I think he was giving class, that when an article was submitted to his spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, to be printed in, I think it was the Nadi Prakash. He used to check, he used to count how many times the name Krishna appeared in the article. And if it appeared sufficient number of times, he would say, print it. So I think by that criteria, you just gave a class that really pleased Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, because you said Krishna so many times.
I said the name Krishna so many times.
Yeah, it was great. But aside from that, it was a wonderful class. But my question is, say you have somebody who's living in the temple and seems to be doing nicely, and then somehow or another they get a little bit, you know, deviated and distracted, and they want to leave the temple, and you know they're leaving the temple because, you know, they just want to fulfill some material desire, and you try preaching to them, you know, in the standard way of, but, you know, and it doesn't work. You're not talking them out of it. You're not getting them on the strength of the philosophy to see that it's futile, it's a waste of time. They're determined. They want to fulfill that material desire. So would it be okay to preach to them, why don't you stay here? Stay here. Just pray to Krishna for the fulfillment of your material desire. You have to do everything still. I mean, you still have to get up and come to the program and this and that. But just pray to Krishna for the fulfillment of your material desire. Krishna, because the person has some faith in Krishna, in other words. So get him to, you know, just tell him, like, encourage him like that. Knowing that, okay, if they do like that, maybe they'll get the material desire fulfilled. Maybe they won't, but they're going to get purified. And it's encouraging for them. They'll be encouraged.
It's quite a common syndrome. Someone's going on happily in devotional service, and all of a sudden it's like a rock fell on their head or something, and they just change, and they have a very strong desire to fulfill some desire or material desires. And yeah, preaching doesn't work. They know the philosophy. They could probably preach better than you could to them about it. And you see, they their face becomes black. It's as if, it's like maybe their aura has become, and they know that, but they're going out. And so should you preach to them too? Well, if they're living in the temple, preach and pray to Krishna to fulfill your material desire. Should you preach them to that? Well, if they're living in a temple, the temple community, then yeah, they have to follow all these rules and regs. But generally, when one has a very strong material desire, then yeah, it's almost as if they're forced. Athakena prayukto yang papam charati purushaha anichannapi varshnaya balam iva niyojitaha. Arjuna asks, what is that force that makes us, even though we know it's wrong, we don't really want to, what is it that forces us to do wrong? So it's almost like we're forced. We can't, there's nothing we can do about it. So if someone's living in a temple community, but if such a strong material desire seemingly just overtakes them, then it's just like they can't, even though they may have been doing it for years, and then there's all of a sudden they can't do it anymore. So in some sense, we can say pray to Krishna to fulfill your material desire, but that may. Yeah, once we get in the field of material desire, it becomes very complex. Just like I'm just thinking of a case of someone, a devotee I know, who's in a similar situation. He was a householder. He still is a householder, but wasn't living in an ashram, or specifically being Grihastha ashram, but not in a temple community, in a city where there's no established temple, but where there are devotees. So his desire is for a woman other than his wife. So is it proper to pray to Krishna for the fulfillment of a sinful desire? It would seem not. Dear Krishna, please bless me so that I can perform a sinful activity. In that case, no. We can't say, pray to Krishna We could say, pray to Krishna that you do the right thing, but even what is right and what is wrong becomes lost. It's almost as if just Maya overtakes, maybe due to some offense or whatever it may be. You want to say something about that, Vijay Prabhu? Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udhara dhi ti vrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. I often think this is the most misquoted verse. Because whether one is full of material desire, there's no material desire, or wishes to be liberated, one should worship Krishna. But there's just usually in the explanation of this verse, there's one word which is left out, ti vrena, with great intensity. It's not that you have material desire and you just do a little Hare Krishna while you're in between brushing your teeth and going to the shower. But one has to very intensely worship Krishna. And the result of doing so will be that one will gradually be freed from that material desire. Or at least one will be saved from falling into grossly sinful life. So if one has a sinful desire, then how can that be fulfilled by devotional service? Many times, just like the word karma, as used in Bhagavad Gita, it's kangshanta karmanang siddhim yajanta iha devata. It's used in the context of desires being fulfilled via the Vedic process, not grossly sinful desires, not grossly sinfully. Now, demons, they may also indirectly worship Vishnu, just like Bali Maharaj was doing so via the process of yajna. So they may also appropriate the Vedic process for fulfilling what was actually a sinful desire. Bali Maharaj conquering the heavenly planets. Well, that's a subtle point. Was it sinful or not? Because a king is allowed to overtake another kingdom if he's more powerful. But on the other hand, it upset the whole universal order. So Bali Maharaj was able to fulfill his desire by the grace of Shukracharya performing yajnas, of whom the beneficiary, or not exactly the beneficiary, but the yajnapati, the person to be worshipped in the yajna, is Vishnu. But then when Shukracharya didn't allow, or wanted to forbid, Bali from worshipping Vishnu, then Bali Maharaj was purified by that. So it's a complex question, which maybe you have to take it case by case. But I wouldn't recommend someone that you worship, you follow the process of devotional service so that you can fulfill this material desire, a sinful desire. We'd have to say, no, don't do that. Anyway, if you do it, then that's sinful. Devotional service is in the mode of ignorance. What's described in Kapila's teaching as devotional service in the mode of ignorance is more the attitude of the performer rather than sinful activity. We don't hear of... Generally, the mode of ignorance is associated with intoxication, meat eating, but when it's the description of the devotional service in the mode of ignorance is if one is envious, proud, bhinnadrik, has a different outlook to that of Krishna. He's not doing it for Krishna's pleasure, so he may be doing it to exploit others, but there's no mention of grossly sinful activities. Yes, please.
If you're a drunkard, just think that this taste of this wine is Krishna. Yeah. So that's a step forward. But there is definitely injunctions in the Shastra that if someone, especially in a renounced order, develops some desire that is against the principles that one should follow in that particular situation, then one should not give him facilities to fulfill that. There's a very famous case from South India, one of the Alwars is like that. That, you know, it was renounced order, and this prostitute wanted to fulfill his desire because he had a desire to have a woman. So the chastisement was, no, if someone is in the renounced order, or any order where you've taken a vow, to facilitate the breaking of that vow is sinful.
Yes.
Exactly. Right. So
to even see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, to even see a worldly person or a person who's associated with women, to even see them, is worse than taking poison for someone who's renounced the world. So, yeah.
For us as devotees, is that if somebody in a situation that Brigapati described, they're following nicely, but now they've developed some desire that's going to take them away, we preach to them not to go. We preach to them that let's examine why you've developed this strong desire. Maybe you've committed some offense that you need to rectify. You know, usually that's the case. They've offended some devotee and they gradually lose the taste, or somehow they lose the taste for chanting and they don't want to go on. So we try to help them to regain the taste, but we don't try to facilitate their breaking and even tell them to pray to Krishna to help you to break, if that's what they want to do, to break principle.
Brigapati Prabhu is talking about a situation where someone is adamant and there's no preaching will work to him. In such a case, maybe the preaching is not so much preaching as putting your arm around them and giving them a big plate of prasadam and say, hey, let's go do kirtan together. Fulfillment, or to have material desire, means that one's desires, one's not satisfied in devotional service. So in such cases, it's probably better not to try to. The more you preach, probably the harder their resolve to go away becomes. But it's you can't communicate. You can talk, you know. You'd have Krishna himself speaking. Like Krishna, he didn't speak to Duryodhana. Krishna could have spoken the whole Bhagavad Gita. Duryodhana wasn't going to listen to one word. He spoke it to Arjuna. Because there was some communication. There's a natural trust between Arjuna and Krishna. So, in such cases, it may be more of the more of love, of feeling that you have to get through to their heart somehow. You can tell them, okay, you leave the temple, but first you have to take this big feast which we're all going to cook. We're giving you a going away party. And I heard there's an amusing story I heard regarding one devotee. This is the early 1970s. One devotee who's now a guru in our movement, that he joined the temple, but every so often he would vanish for a few days. Then he'd come back. And he'd be going on with devotional service very enthusiastically. Then he'd leave. Then he'd come back. And then this gradually became less and less, and then gradually he just stayed. Then after some years, his parents came to the temple and were speaking with other devotees, and they're saying, yes, we're happy, our boy is here, he's very happy now. And just one thing we didn't understand, when he first joined, every so often he used to come home and he'd get this farina and sugar and butter and cook this huge pot of something and then say some prayers and eat huge amounts. And then he'd go to sleep for a day and then he'd go back to the temple. We never understand why he did that. So maybe you have to fill them up with Mahaprabhu. Just like Rabindranath is out there every day. He's right there, making sure you don't go out without Mahaprasad. So all of those you listening on the internet, you don't get the Mahaprasad from Rabindranath Prabhu. Better you can come here. And if you come here, then you take more and more Mahaprasad. And then maybe you engage in the kirtan and say, hey, hurry, bowl. It's better here than there. So, yeah, it's not all just philosophy, is it? Bringing people to devotional service, keeping them in devotional service. One thing I'm hearing from all the devotees, I mean, been hearing for years, is that we need looking after also. We need looking after also, especially devotees who are living away from a temple community, or even they're going to a temple, but you know, no one says, how are you doing? And just presume. They also need. Everyone needs. We all need, isn't it? We all need love and affection. We also need philosophy. So, not too dry and not too sweet. Krishna, of course, there's no question of being too sweet, but we need philosophical understanding also. So, it's not just rules and regulations and philosophy. That's also required, and it's not all just bliss without any rules and regulations and philosophy. So, balance is needed. And what to do in such cases? People going away is very difficult, and it's painful also to the devotees to observe that. So better catch it before it happens. If you see someone's looking morose, or they're just not talking to anyone, or not coming around, you say, "Hey, Prabhu, what's going on there?" Yeah, you want to say something?
This is one quick question. One of the scenes I've heard, the Prabhupada says something to you.
Oh, okay. I never heard that Prabhupada, you've heard that Prabhupada said if a devotee leaves, it's 50% his fault and 50% the temple management's fault. I've heard, it's actually the first time I've heard that. Maybe it's there are many Prabhupada saids which maybe they circulate in small circles, but. If it's not in writing, don't take it seriously. Yeah. Well, there you go. Prabhupada said, and it's in writing. So, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. It's all right. Just you can say they're here. That's all.
They're here, and anyone who would like to come and look at them.
Tomorrow we'll say more when we have the new book. I feel a little embarrassed sometimes.
Thousand names of Vishnu.